When I was about 18, my minister was booked to do a speaking tour in various venues across Ireland. He asked a few of us if we'd go as the worship band, and so we went with him to took a week off work. He said, that'd be great, that'd be good fun, but be a good experience as well. And so we crossed from Fishguard in Pembrokeshire to Rosslare in Ireland in the middle of October. That's quite key, because that crossing is not smooth. It is unbelievably rough. Well, it was the year that we went when I was 18. You know, there was me, there was dinosaurs. It was a long time ago. So there was just an awful lot of up and down like that. And there were tables and chairs flowing from one side of the boat to the other side of the boat. There were people doing things over the side of a boat. I don't quite know what they were doing. It was absolutely horrendous. I have never, ever been on a boat and it's been that bad. It gave me an understanding of what, when we read in Scripture, what the disciples must have felt like when they're in storms on the boat and Jesus is having a kip in the corner of the boat, or they're in a storm and Jesus is walking towards them on the water, all of those kind of biblical experiences. It was a storm of biblical proportions. It was absolutely awful, and we got to the other side, and let's just say we didn't need to eat for a little while because we felt slightly queasy. Fortunately, coming back was not anywhere near as bad. But looking back at that time, it was a physical expression of what turmoil is, because turmoil is when everything is around you is in chaos. And as we crossed the Irish Sea that night in October, all those years ago, there was certainly chaos all around us. And turmoil is an aspect to life that we cannot escape. I suspect you would also be able to share a story of a physical turmoil, like my ferry crossing. But more than that, you're probably able to share stories of when your life seems like it's in turmoil. That could be relational struggles and breakdowns, financial chaos and crisis, work stresses and strains, health concerns that are overwhelming. All of these and many more situations in life can be and are at times turmoil in our lives. And at the start of this sermon, I want us to just acknowledge that we live in a fallen world. Where things around us and indeed ourselves are flawed, and therefore turmoil exists in our lives. But turmoil also exists, doesn't it, in the world around us? It always has. And this side of Jesus coming again, it always will. And the age we're living in means that we are brought ever closer to the turmoil in the world, because media brings this turmoil into our lives and our living rooms, even when we don't want it. You know, the saying, no news is good news, seems like it's never been truer than it is in our world today. Turmoil is everywhere. The war in Ukraine is turmoil. The war in the Middle East is turmoil. The political situations both at home and abroad are turmoil. And there's a phrase, we call it political unrest, which suggests restful situations are what we're aiming for. Yet in those situations, rest has not been found. But also, in a weird way, we're drawn to turmoil. Because programs on TV that have trauma and chaos at the heart of them seem to suck us in, and we can waste hours watching programs like 24 Hours in A&E. Traffic Cops. Cops UK Body Cams. We even watch Bake Off hoping there's going to be some drama and turmoil as a sponge doesn't rise or something like that. You do. I watch Bake Off because I enjoy it and we like it as a family. But it's always better when somebody messes up and something doesn't go quite right. You see people in tears over a Victoria sponge or some shortbread or some gingerbread. And it's hilarious because we like the turmoil. There is drama, turmoil all around us. Maybe you've been watching the TV program Educate in Yorkshire. There is turmoil. They call it drama. The most, it seems to be the way it's edited, the busiest adults in the school are the ones who are looking after the drama of the kids, of these teenagers who have this drama going on around them, and they live in a perpetual state of this turmoil. This drama, this turmoil that is all around us. And Tony Evans, he's a pastor and speaker. He wrote a book on the names of God. He says this: yet the worst turmoil of all often takes place in one's own soul. This happens when you can't seem to live with yourself, when your own pain, anxiety, depression, and regret eat you up, leaving you with an unsettled ache. You're at war within. And this morning, we're continuing our series, looking at the names of God. And today, we're thinking about Jehovah Shalom, the Lord, our peace. And this name of God speaks to us for our need for calm, security, and stability. And peace is one of the major themes of the story of God throughout the whole of the Bible. Throughout the Bible, peace is mentioned hundreds of times. Peace is mentioned over 20 times in the Psalms alone. The Old Testament book of Isaiah and other Old Testament books speak about peace. Move to the New Testament and we hear of Jesus being born, for whom has been given the name Prince of Peace. Paul uses the word peace around 50 times in his writing. That's the Apostle Paul who wrote a lot of the New Testament. And peace is a central theme to his teaching. And so to help us this morning understand the peace of God, we first need to see where this name, Jehovah Shalom, comes from. And like many of the other compound names of God that we've been looking at, Jehovah Shalom is only seen once in the Bible, and we find it in the Old Testament book of Judges. And to put where this name comes from into context, the Israelites were not helping themselves, which is nothing new. We could say that wherever they went, drama seemed to follow them. This wasn't because of God, but it was because of them. And you see, the Israelites had a destructive pattern that they seemed to have adopted as their MO. This was how they lived life. They rebelled against God through sin. That leads them to God's punishment and discipline. This then drives them back to God, where they're so sorry that and they will never turn from him again. God responds by delivering them, and then the cycle starts all over again. Remember, the Israelites were living before Jesus came and saved all humanity and took this sin on himself once and for all. Until then, there was this cycle that became the life of the Israelites. Even after they'd seen God do amazing things like the parting of the Red Sea, and even after God had led them into the Promised Land, which, when we get to Judges, to Gideon, they're in the Promised Land. He's given them everything they could possibly want, and yet they still followed this cycle of drama. And so we come to the Old Testament book of Judges and to chapter 6. God had allowed, because of their rebellion against them, God's allowed the Israelites to be captured by the Midianites. And so the enemies the Israelites were supposed to be defeating were defeating them. So the Midianites had made life terrible for the Israelites, who could be found often in hiding. They had little to no food. The Midianites took away all of their resources. And the Israelites were once again at their lowest and living without any peace in their lives. So let's pick up this story in Judges 6, starting at verse 7. When they cried out to the Lord because of Midian, the Lord sent a prophet to the Israelites. He said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of slavery in Egypt. I rescued you from the Egyptians and from all who oppress you. I drove out your enemies and gave you their land. I told you, I am the Lord your God. You must not worship the gods of the Amorites in whose land you now live, but you have not listened to me. That's nothing new for the Israelites. Then the angel of the Lord came and sat beneath the great tree at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash of the clan of Abiezer. Gideon, son of Joash, was threshing wheat at the bottom of a wine press to hide the grain from the Midianites. The angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, "Mighty hero, the Lord is with you." Isn't that amazing? That God often sees things in us that we don't see ourselves. So you've got Gideon, who's scared stiff. He's in a wine press where you make wine, not thresh wheat. He's scared. He's trying to hide everything. And God looks at him and sees something that Gideon can't see in himself. I love that. Mighty hero, the Lord is with you. "Sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? And where are all the miracles our ancestors told us about? Didn't they say the Lord brought us up out of Egypt, but now the Lord has abandoned us and handed us over to the Midianites?" Then the Lord turned to him and said, "Go with the strength you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. I am sending you." "But Lord," Gideon replied, "how can I rescue Israel? My clan is the weakest in the whole tribe of Manasseh, and I am the least in my entire family." The Lord said to him, "I will be with you, and you will destroy the Midianites as if you were fighting against one man." Gideon replied, "If you are truly going to help me, show me a sign to prove that it is really the Lord speaking to me. Don't go away until I come back and bring my offering to you," he answered. "I will stay here until you return." Gideon hurried home. He cooked a young goat, and with a basket of flour, he baked some bread without yeast. Then, carrying the meat in the basket and the broth in a pot, he brought them out and presented them to the angel who was under the great tree. The angel of God said to him, "Place the meat and the unleavened bread on this rock and pour the broth over it." And Gideon did as he was told. Then the angel of the Lord touched the meat and bread with the tip of the staff in his hand, and fire flamed up from the rock and consumed all he had brought, and the angel of the Lord disappeared. When Gideon realized that it was the angel of the Lord, he cried out, "O sovereign Lord, I'm doomed. I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. It's all right. The Lord replied, "Don't be afraid. You will not die." And Gideon built an altar to the Lord there and named it Yahweh Shalom, which means "the Lord is peace." The altar remains in Ophrah in the name of the clan of Abiezer to this day. Gideon saw something new of God that day. He saw him as Jehovah Shalom, the Lord is peace, and it was life-changing for him. And friends, something powerful happens when we see a name of God come to the forefront of our minds and hearts. When we see a name of God clearly in front of us, it speaks to us. This week, someone from the congregation sent me this photo. I'll let it catch up. My surname is Dulson, for those of you that don't know, to put it into a bit of context. Somebody thought I was moonlighting and the police had finally caught up with me. I saw that, and I don't know, but I find it very powerful when I see my surname written down. Mainly because there's not many Dulsons around. It's not like, I mean, I'm from South Wales. It's not like Jones or Evans, where they're to a penny. There's not many Dulsons around. But what I find even more interesting, can you imagine if I owned that business or if I worked for them? Because my first name, Wayne, means wagon driver. So if I owned that business or worked for that business, talk about epitomizing my name. I could not get any more of my name unless I had a cart and a horse in front of me or something like that. Seriously, seeing a name of God as Gideon did on that day in his mind, building that altar. Jehovah Shalom. I'm scared stiff in this wine press threshing wheat, and yet God's called me a mighty hero. God's going to save us. The Lord is peace. And when we see, when we grasp a name of God, a word portrait of God, when that becomes a reality for us, it's a powerful thing. And today, friends, I want us to grasp the powerful name of the Lord is peace. For I believe we need to know this peace in our lives. So even though things are tough for Gideon, he sees something about who God is, and that is that God is peace. And that changes everything for him. Gideon shows us that experiencing God's peace doesn't mean our situation has suddenly resolved itself, because it hadn't. But it does mean God has shown you something new of who he is that gives you something powerful in your place of turmoil, for that gives you peace. So what is this peace that we're talking about? Now, if I was to ask you to split into groups, and don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to do that. I know how much you love it, but we're not going to do that this morning. If I was to ask you to split into groups and discuss what peace is, it's likely that there would be some discussion about experiencing a sense of calm. Maybe quiet. After all, the word peace often hangs out with the word quiet. And sometimes you parents who've got small children will often shout, "I just want some peace and quiet." We tell people around us to stop talking, as we just need some peace and quiet. But surely when Gideon uncovered the name Jehovah Shalom for God, that meant so much more than simply a bit of calm in his life. It wasn't about having quiet in his life. After all, when God revealed himself as Jehovah Shalom, Gideon and the Israelites were still under the rule of the Midianites. The turmoil was still all around them. It's not as if God said, "I am Jehovah Shalom and abracadabra," and suddenly everything is calm and there's no more captivity. No, 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 that's not what happened. Gideon experienced God's peace, even though at that moment his circumstances hadn't changed. So peace has to be bigger than calm and quiet. Going back to my ferry journey, God's peace was there, even though there was turmoil all around us. Because what our minister got us to do was to take all of the chairs. There was this big cage in the bar area, and he said, "Let's take all of the tables and chairs that are stored there, let's take them out, and we'll sleep in there. Because even though this turmoil is going all around us, we will have peace in there." And that's what we did. And we went to sleep in this cage thing. It wasn't a prison. I just want to throw that out there. Let me tell you a story. One day, two artists were requisitioned to paint a picture of peace. The one who painted the best picture would win $250,000. As you can imagine, both painters attempted to paint the finest painting they could paint. The first painter set to work by creating a scene portrait of a lake with the sun glistening off it at just the right angle so it sparkled across the top of the water. The poorest blue shade lay across the top of the water, complementing the blue sky. The artist added a young girl skipping around the lake with a yellow balloon fastened to her wrist. Trees towered gracefully on one side of the lake, with birds gathering in the tallest branches. And after completing his painting, the painter leaned back, took a deep breath of, "Ah, there is no better painting than peace that I have just painted." He was sure. He started to spend $250,000. He ordered his new car and all of those kind of things. The second artist had a very different idea in his mind when he painted his image. In his painting, the sky was pitch black. Lightning zigzagged through the air in unpredictable movements. The painter also had water, but the waves in his painting roared as if they were somehow awakened from a terrible dream. Trees bent and bowed, whining in the wind. The painting looked more like a portrait of disaster. But all the way down, at the bottom left-hand side, just near the very edge of this horrific scene, a little bird stood on a rock. Little bird had its mouth open, singing a beautiful song. One faint light shone down on the bird as it sung in spite of the situation all around it. Now, I suspect that many of us would think that the painting on the left was the one that depicted peace most fully. However, the second painting, the one on the right, won the competition. The judges chose him as the winner because he showed the truest manifestation of peace, for the bird represents a well-being that resonates from within despite what's going on all around. Because friends, being at peace doesn't mean being calm when everything around you is calm. When all is calm around us, we're supposed to be calm. Being at peace means you're at rest, even when everything else seems to be wrong. You see, peace is not the absence of conflict. It's conflict. It's not positive thinking or having good feelings. It comes from knowing that God is in control, even in the drama, the turmoil of our circumstances. For you see, the word for peace, shalom, means completeness and wholeness. And God enabled Gideon to experience this, even though he was threshing wheat in a wine press. He's in hiding, he's in fear, and yet it's in that moment that God enters his situation, and then he experiences wholeness, even before his situation is resolved. And his name, Jehovah Shalom, in that name, God invites us to enter into his peace, to experience completeness and wholeness, even when the drama is still unfolding all around us. And like Gideon, we too can experience the peace of knowing that God is near and with us and our situations and seasons of turmoil. So how do we experience the peace that Gideon experienced, even when life isn't calm for you? I want to take us to the New Testament and first to the words of Jesus as seen in John's Gospel. In John chapter 16, Jesus teaches about the Holy Spirit, then about prayer and how our relationship with God is going to be reconciled through his death and resurrection. And then he says, I have told you all this so that you may have peace in me. Here on earth you will have many trials and sorrows, but take heart because I have overcome the world. Friends, when we realize that we are never alone, that Jesus doesn't leave us when our circumstances get tough, but that through him we already have overcome our circumstances, then we can live with peace, this wholeness in Jesus. John 16, 33, Jesus' words enable us to have a tranquility on the inside that eases our mind despite the drama, the chaos, the trauma that's going on the outside. Jesus reminds us what he reminded Gideon, peace isn't defined by our circumstances. And this peace is what the Apostle Paul experienced. We see this in one of the Apostle Paul's letters to the church in Philippi. And as we read these words from this letter, just hold in your mind that Paul is in prison in Rome as he writes this letter of thanks to the Philippians. Always be full of joy in the Lord. I say it again, rejoice. Let everyone see that you are considerate in all you do. Remember, the Lord is coming soon. Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank him for all he has done. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. Keep putting into practice all you learned and received from me, everything you heard from me and saw me doing. Then the God of peace will be with you. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. Great words. And I think these are a blueprint for experiencing God as Jehovah Shalom. But here's the thing about experiencing God's peace. You see, what we want to do when there's turmoil all around us, we want to say a quick arrow prayer, a quick fire prayer to God, and then sit back and boosh, all of a sudden peace is all around us and the water is calm. It doesn't work like that. For this blueprint, for us to experience God as Jehovah Shalom, we have to do things. We have to be active, not passive. You see, first thing that we need to do is we need to be people who rejoice in the Lord. What we're thinking about here is working hard to find that deep inner joy and contentment in God, in who he is, in his promises, and all that God has done and does. This isn't about being that person who's always happy regardless of what's going on in your life. They're really annoying, aren't they, those people? That they're always singing and they're, oh, yeah, it's great, it's great. It's, oh, it's okay, don't worry, I lost my job, everything's fine. You know, oh, it's okay, my relationship's broken down, everything's fine. Oh, it's okay, I've got this illness. Oh, it's okay, and they just laugh. That's just false. When people are like that, you want to bless them with the hand of the Lord, don't you? It's just annoying. This isn't about always being happy and false happy, regardless of what's going on in your life, for joy isn't happiness. Joy is a deep inner security and assurance that God is with us. And so rejoicing in the Lord is about always staying close and connected to God, no matter what our circumstances are saying. So Paul, writing from prison. And so his practical circumstances weren't the best. And yet here he was saying, rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, rejoice. You see, he had two choices. He could look at his circumstances and think how awful it was and have a bit of a pity party, think of all that he was missing out on. Or he could, while still in his circumstances, call to mind what God is and what God has done for him and rejoice in that. For Paul, he could bring to mind his Damascus Road experience where he met Jesus. He could remember the times God had saved him from death. He could think about the times he had seen the Holy Spirit move powerfully. He could remind himself that God sent Jesus to die in his place. He could think of all the amazing adventures he'd been on with and for God. He could remember the times when he had seen God move powerfully in his life. And as he does that, he rejoices in the Lord. Even though he's in prison, even though he can't get out of prison, even though his circumstances are dire, he remembers, he calls to mind all the amazing things that God has done. And because of that, he rejoices. Now, I'd like to tell you this morning, I find that easy to do, that in all and every circumstance, I rejoice in the Lord. But like you, I'm human and I don't always get it right. But hearing and thinking on these things again helps me to remember that God is always God. And the truth of this is not determined by my circumstances. Rejoicing in the Lord doesn't necessarily get you out of your struggles, but it does help us to not be defined by our struggles. Secondly, Paul encourages us that to experience the peace of God, we need to be specific and thankful. Paul doesn't simply say, tell us to pray, but he says to pray about what? Everything. Everything. Be specific. We are to tell God every detail of what is concerning us. We are to pray deliberate requests. It's when a child goes to their parent because something is troubling them and they just blurt out what's on their mind. There's no filter. Even when as parents you'd like there to be a filter, there often isn't. They tell every single detail, even the details you don't want to hear. And to know the peace of God, we need to come before God and be specific. Friends, I don't think we're very good at this. We're not specific to God. I remember speaking to a friend and their car was on the last legs. And so they spent months praying to God that God would help them get a new car. Or a car that was new to them. And out of the blue, a few months later, the wife got an inheritance from her mum before her mum had died. And said, I'd like to give this to you. And it enabled them to get a new car. Now we don't like praying prayers like that because we think, is that bordering on prosperity preaching? No, it's not. God invites us to ask him, to seek him for all of our needs. He wants to provide for us. Did he give our friends a Ferrari? No, he didn't. He gave them a decent second-hand car that got them from A to B. But they prayed specifically about it. And if it was in God's will, God came up and he gave it to them. And we look at this kind of praying and we think, oh no, we couldn't possibly pray like that. Why? God is Father. I'm a dad. And I want my kids to come to me and be specific in their requests. I don't want them to come to me and say, Dad, I'm struggling, but I can't tell you what it is. But I want you to sort it at the same time. I think, Kesra, I'm not a mind reader. Be specific. What is it that's troubling you? What is it that you need in this moment in time? And if it's appropriate, and if it's good for you, And if I, as a dad, am able to do it, I will help you with that. And I think in the West, we struggle with these kind of prayers. But friends, here's the truth. God doesn't answer the prayers that you don't ask. But you've got a chance of him answering the prayers that you do ask. So Paul says, pray about everything. Say it, everything. What have we got to pray about? Everything. Good, I'm just taking it away. That's okay. We need to pray about everything. Be specific. It doesn't mean you're going to get it all, because God is a good father. But pray about everything and allow him to do the rest. And not only do we need to be specific, we need to be thankful. Even when life is tough, there are still things to give God thanks for. Yes, the big things in life, such as Jesus, your family, but also the little things in life, such as the food on your table, the clothes on your back, that old hymn, count your blessings, name them one by one. Thank the Lord for what he has done. So be specific in your prayers and always be thankful. Even when you're in turmoil, there is something to give God thanks for. Even when that boat from Fishguard to Rosslare was like that, my stomach was going like that, I was thankful that I was able to go there. I was thankful that I had somewhere to lay my head, even though I felt a little bit like that as I was lying down. Always something to be thankful for. And the third thing that we need to do to experience Jehovah Shalom is to guard what we think. J.B. Phillips' translation of verses 8 and 9 say this. Here is a last piece of advice. If you believe in goodness and if you value the approval of God, fix your minds on the things which are holy and right and pure and beautiful and good. Model your conduct on what you have learned from me, what I have told you and shown you, and you will find the God of peace will be with you. All the battles we know are often won and lost in our mind. The mind is a powerful thing, and when we think, and what we think about has such a bearing on our lives. So if we're thinking about things that are the opposite to pure and holy and beautiful and good, then the peace of God is going to elude us. This is about being people who walk the walk and talk the talk. The way to live with the shalom of God when in a tough situation is to look at what we're thinking about, what we're reading, what we're watching, what we're speaking and joining in with when we're with non-Christian friends and so on. There's so much that would seek to pull us off course. And Paul is saying to watch your minds, focus on the things of God, and then you will know the peace of God. It can be something that is so easy to overlook, but friends, we are to think about what we think about. This is why doom scrolling is no good for us. Believe in everything that the media and social media algorithms feed us with. You know, years ago we used to say, you can't believe everything you read in the papers. Yet I think we're even worse at that now. You know, we read one thing on social media and we instantly believe that that is the truth. And then we comment and we're fed even more stuff that purports that certain view. And all it does is breed fear, hatred, anxiety, depression, and much more. When this happens, the peace of God is so far from us. All because we're not thinking about what we're thinking about. Are you with me? Don't worry, we're coming to a close. It's okay. So I want to draw this sermon to a close, and I sense that for some here this morning, life isn't very peaceful, and this name of God is eluding you. Maybe you've been striving to remove the conflict, and yet this name of God means you can be like the little bird in the painting and be at rest despite what's going on around you. That is what it means to live with the name Jehovah Shalom. When we enter in, we live by the name Jehovah Shalom, we experience rest despite there being struggle and turmoil and drama and chaos all around us. Matthew 11, 28 says, come to me, all you who are weary, and I will give you rest. Friends, this is what living by Jehovah Shalom means, is that we live in rest in our souls even when the waves swirl around us. And to do this, we take on what the Bible calls Jesus' yolk, and it's got nothing to do with eggs. It means we take upon the things of Jesus and not the things of the world. Eugene Peterson described it as learning the unforced rhythms of grace. I read this week that if Jesus had called this an eye yoke, we'd all be downloading it all the time. I read, Christ's eye yoke brings peace and rest because Jesus is the Prince of Peace and he's left his peace with us. And friends, we download the peace of God by abiding in him, by remaining in him. Maybe you're facing the storms of life and you're running away from God. Because do you know what? I'm not criticizing you because I do it. We have a storm in life and we run away from God. Because that's what the enemy calls us to do. Yet all of this teaching from Gideon, from Paul, from Jesus, is when there's a storm in life, that's when we need to run more towards God than we've ever run to him in the past. We abide with God. We remain rooted and connected to God. Not when the sun is shining and all's well with the world, but also and even more so when there's waves battling all around us. That's when we stay close to God. And when we face the storms of life, here's the thing. Lean in, church. We abide with God, not to get answers necessarily, not to get the storms taken away, but we abide with God simply to be with him. There's something powerful that happens when we're in a tough situation. And somebody just holds us. I might have shared it before. It's just popped in to my head, so I'm going to share it. I had a picture given to me many years ago. And the picture was of a beach. And it had a beach wall, and the sand went up to the wall. And it was long after my dad had died, and I was an adult, and sitting against the wall was my dad. And he said to me, just come and cutch into me. Cutch is a Welsh word for cuddle, for hug. And there were storms going on in life. And yet in that moment, I just sat down next to my dad, just cutched into him and allowed him to put his arm around me. He didn't sort my situations out. I didn't get a flash of lightning, a flash of, whoa, that's what I need to do. But I just felt held by him. When the waves are crashing all around us, church, we abide with God, not so that he stops the waves, although he can, because the wind and waves know his name. Don't ever forget that. The wind and waves in your life, they bow down, they know the name of Jesus. But we abide with God. We abide with Jehovah Shalom. Just to be engulfed, to be held, to be touched by God. And it's in that moment, and that's where I feel Gideon was. It's in that moment when everything is swirling around him, when the Midianites have still stolen everything from the Israelites, when he's scared stiff and he's hiding in a wine press, when he doesn't know that he hasn't got what it takes. Just with God. That's why we abide with God. That's where we experience the yoke, the eye yoke. That's where we experience the unforced rhythms of God. Because here's the thing. Then we know the truth that God is with us. And we align our thoughts with that truth. Because when you're held, when you're just held, you know that the one doing the holding is not only with you, but they are for you. Church, my prayer for you today is in the turmoil, in the drama, in the chaos of life, you would experience Jehovah Shalom, because you would know that God is not only with you, He is for you. And may that just do something deep in your soul. May that restore you as a child of the living God. With God, we can experience His peace in any situation, because in His presence, all odds change once we know Him as Jehovah Shalom. Father, I want to pray for my friends gathered here today. I want to pray for those whose lives are in a bit of turmoil, for the chaos, the drama that's going on around them. Like Gideon, like Paul, may they know that You are there. May they see Your invitation to just lean in to them and to allow Your arms to hold them. And as their heart, as their ear hears Your heartbeat, and slowly their heart starts to beat in time with Yours. Even though the situation in that moment has not changed, may they experience a supernatural peace that can only come from Jehovah Shalom. It can only come from You. And in that moment, may we rejoice. May we be specific and give thanks. And may we fix our minds on the right things as we abide deeply with You. And as we do that, may we intentionally allow You to restore our souls.